Coming up on AI Haven't a Clue.
Grok could get banned.
Why is this the thing that's tipped the scales when there are many, many other examples of pretty horrific things? Dr. Chat, we'll see you now. You're obsessed with AI slop.
This is not slop, my friend. No. And we're talking to a team trying to stop AI toys.
In the last 5 years, children's speech has already dropped.
It's a public health emergency.
We just simply don't know what the psychological implications are.
It's causing havoc in education right now. Absolute havoc.
Oh, hi. Welcome to AI Haven't a Clue. Hi. Fancy seeing you here.
Wow.
My name is George, AI novice. James Chanda.
Hello.
Sitting opposite me.
Sensei AI. Exactly. Very good.
Yeah, it works better,
I think, when you read it. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. This is the podcast where we are guiding you through the wild world of AI. And am I like the Karate Kid? Wax on, wax off,
yeah,
then?
Yeah, could be a bit of that. Not getting much less wilder, though, is it? If anything, it's gone up a few notches.
It is now everywhere, everything, all the time.
Yeah.
And it's getting quite intense. Do you think people are starting to actually get a bit fed up of AI filling the news agenda?
I think we're aware of, as long as stuff is still exciting or useful or salacious or just newsworthy even, I think it's all right. I think we're aware of that.
A lot of negativity this week, especially in the news agenda, which we will get onto in a bit. Quite rightly, by the way, we will cover Grok and everything that's going on there. We will get James's take on that very, very shortly. Plus, we've got all the latest news from the world of AI. A really interesting story to tell with our guests later about AI toys and the danger behind them. And of course, James takes on a big listener question. As always.
I've got something positive for you later on, maybe.
You do?
Just to put in the mix, because it is a bit of a Debbie Downer.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I've got something nice for you. Yeah.
Okay, well, there we go. I was going to stop listening. But now James has got something positive for us.
Yeah.
Why go anywhere? All right, James, before we get into this week's news, our little favourite game, we do sometimes play this on the podcast, and I want to do it more with guests. Chat roulette. I want you to go into your chat GPT history. Last thing that you looked at and asked chat for.
It's boring. Harris and Hool, you know, a little coffee shop.
No.
They're owned by Cafe Nero.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to know who they're owned by. They're owned by Cafe
Nero. Oh, they're in, okay.
That's boring.
What's the one after that?
Great Fire of London. How did it start? Is Monument Station named after the monument? Of course it is.
Little insight into the wild world of James Chandler.
Go on then. Verrucas. What was it?
No, it's GDPR or whatever it's called. I can't read my... the most recent one is I asked it for some travel advice for if I visited Cape Cod, where I should stay.
What? Oh, okay. Not visas and stuff, because you know...
No. I'm not asking. The one before that was I asked it for a recipe for raisin cane sauce.
Raisin canes, that's the big one. They dip it in the big...
The chicken is like and it gave me a pretty decent fake raisin canes replica.
Good.
We're boring, aren't we?
Bit.
That's well done.
Good. Right, let's do it with our guests later.
Yeah, shall we? Okay. They hate AI, so it might not be the best thing to do, but it could be fun. Let us know yours, by the way. If you've got... I tell you what, if you're listening right now, do it. Get your ChatGPT app out. It doesn't have to be chat. It could be Gemini, whatever. Have a little look. If there's something a bit funny, email us. You can tell us if it's something boring. We just probably won't include it in the podcast.
Yeah. Good icebreaker as well. Little party trick. You know, just get people to pull it out. It's the new...
dangerous, though, as you say.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because people go quite, like, deep with their chat or their Gemini or... Yeah. Probably not their Grok, James. Because I assume everyone listening has probably seen what's been going on, especially in the UK with Grok potentially being banned. Cliff Notes, James, just for those who may have been on holiday or whatever, they haven't quite caught up with this story. What are the headlines before we get into it?
So I'll sort of do my best sort of Rory Stewart and try and sort of take it back. So Grok, which is of course owned by Elon Musk, has been criticised. It's been generating non-consensual sexualised images of women and children, with some of that content has been publicly shared on X. The UK government has stepped in and they've asked the regulator Ofcom, to urgently investigate whether Grok has breached the Online Safety Act. They're asking them to do that very, very quickly. People are arguing on this that the behaviour is actually abuse. It's not hiding behind free speech. We talked a bit last week about Venezuela and what was happening on X and things there. Elon, unsurprisingly, has accused the UK government of using this issue to justify censorship. And that's the kind of narrative that you're going to get out of the States, whether it's from J.D. Vance or the president, is that somehow, you know, we're trying to stifle free speech. It really isn't here. This is just not great stuff that's happening on the platform.
This isn't the first time that Grok has been caught up with this sort of thing. Taylor Swift had a bit of a issue.
Yeah.
With Grok sexualizing her a few months ago. Prime Minister is saying X could lose its right to self-regulate. Now, this is in a sentence that doesn't sound huge, actually has huge repercussions, because the likes of, obviously, Meta with Facebook and Instagram, the likes of Snapchat and TikTok, none of these platforms, as it stands, are regulated. They all self-regulate, some better than others, it's fair to say.
Yeah.
This would be a game-changing thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it, like you said, it wouldn't just affect X. It would be a wide, sweeping piece of regulation that would come in that would apply to everyone. You're right, in the UK, we have a very healthy, very vibrant system of self-regulation. And I passionately believe part of the job that I do is justifying it in a way that surely it's better to have people who know how these platforms are built, the experts that are involved in maintaining them, make decisions on what's kind of right and wrong, rather than, you know, perhaps a parliamentarian or an MP that might be in post for 2 years, knows nothing about it and might kind of say, kind of do this. The best mix is when both are happening. Healthy self-regulation is when both are happening. And of course, we've got trade bodies and other organisations that are kind of upholding standards. But this is the problem when you overstep the mark on things like this. You know, government have to be seen, and rightly are intervening. I mean, just to go into what some of the punishments could be here, Ofcom have the ability to fine X up to 10% of their global revenue, which is a pretty chunky number. Or they could go as far as blocking the platform in the UK, which is going to be a huge political hot potato. If you remember what J.D. Vance went to some of the European leaders just last year saying, you know, you're stifling free speech of American companies and we're not going to tolerate it. So I don't know if we're going to hit the big red button on that. But yeah, this is a very fast moving situation. The government have slightly given it to Ofcom to deal with it rather than dealing with it head on. They're right. They kind of are the regulator. They should look into it. But, you know, when you pair it back, you know, effectively, this is about abuse and violence towards women and children, which surely as a country, you know, we just can't tolerate. We need to do something about it. And if the platforms aren't going to do it themselves, then there need to be some sort of intervention.
Totally, absolutely. My two questions to you are, firstly, this is not the first time a social media giant has way overstepped the boundaries and done something incredibly unethical and wrong. So my first question is, why is this the thing that's tipped the scales? When there are many, many other examples of pretty horrific things that have taken place over the last decade. Second question is, and it kind of ties into this, do you think there is an Elon Musk element here? And do you think if ChatGPT was the one at fault here, there would be the same reaction?
It's a tough one, isn't it? In a way, it's hard to imagine someone else creating the conditions where this type of thing could happen.
Yeah.
So it's kind of difficult to say. We could see some new legislation come in, which kind of feels like that should happen anyway. But it really does come back to what we come back to all the time, is that, you know, often with regulation in fast moving areas of technology, it's so hard to kind of keep pace. You are reliant in a way of the platform self-policing themselves. Now, I think you talk to 99 out of 100 people, they're going to say, well, of course you shouldn't be allowed to undress women and children on a platform. That's just not the right thing to do. It's not there in the letter of the law. So it can happen, but it shouldn't. It's a complicated issue for one that seems very, 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 very simple. And as I say, this is going to keep playing out. So we should keep our eyes on it.
And I guess the one thing to build on that, it is now a criminal offence as of this week to create AI sexualized images.
Like
so that, I mean, that's a big move. It does, I guess, once again, tap into that whole thing where the tech has outrun the regulation and the governance. And It ties back in. It's another level of this debate that we have had many, many times in this podcast, where how, you know, do you let AI and technology run free and run wild? And because of that, there are some huge benefits and advancements. Mm. It's not tied back. But then on the flip side, awful things like this can happen. So it does tie back into that question and that age-old thing that we've talked about all through the last year, of where do you draw the line with governance and regulation? Is it needed? And how do you do it?
Yeah. And I think this is a really cut and dry case in my mind, because this sort of thing shouldn't be allowed. There have been other instances where something like nudity on platforms for some like historical images, you'll know that image of the Vietnamese girls running away from the napalm strike. One of them is not clothed. That was banned on social platforms. It's like, well, no, that shouldn't be banned because that's a historical image. So there are moments where it would be actually useful for a government or a regulator to come in and say, these are the rules. Self-regulation works, but you can do this and you can't do this. This just feels so obvious that you shouldn't be able to. Why does anyone need to say it? Yeah, but there we go.
It's very nuanced, and it's certainly a debate that will rumble on and on. But yes, obviously, thank goodness something's been done immediately about this topic. I just think it will hopefully open up more conversation about other platforms, other elements where regulation isn't where it needs to be, where laws aren't up to date with modern day technology. And I think hopefully that's a conversation which will be kind of sparked off the back of this.
Yeah, interested to get Donald's take on this one, but let's see.
Don't. Okay, James, we will move on now to Dr. ChatGPT. What's happening?
OpenAI has launched ChatGPT Health that's going to review your medical records. So basically, if you're in the US, you can get ChatGPT to analyse all of your medical records, all of the health app data, steps, what your heart's doing, how you're sleeping, and it will give you more personalised answer. Give me your snap thought on whether this is the best thing in the world or the worst.
I suppose it depends on what they are then giving you advice on. Like, are they then telling you you're fit, you're healthy, don't worry, you don't need to ever see a doctor? Or is it more of a breakdown? I don't know. What are they feeding back to the individual?
It kind of depends. I mean, there's some guardrails around this stuff as well, I should say. You know, any of the conversations that they're having about people's health, they're being stored very separately. They're not going to be used to train models. Other people aren't going to be able to access that sort of stuff. And in a weird way, like, I wear a Garmin watch, people who wear Apple watches, that's already getting some quite intimate data about steps and sleep and where you are. And like, I'm relatively comfortable with Garmin knowing, you know.
But is there not a difference between you seeing data about your body, your heart rate, whatever it might be, and you getting advice about that data?
Yeah, that's the next step. You're absolutely right. One is, you know, seeing the data, how many hours of deep sleep did I have? On top of that is analysis based on that and maybe hundreds of other things. You know, it won't come as a surprise that privacy campaigners are saying that this type of data is highly intimate, highly sensitive. We need proper safeguards in place. Has AI got a brilliant track record of doing this stuff? Not so sure. It's being rolled out to a small group of users, as I said, based in the US, not here in the UK. It's not in the EU yet. It would get very, very tricky based on some of the privacy laws that we have here. So it's another kind of one to watch. I mean, it's not a job I would have seen AI coming for, like a doctor. I think we kind of need doctors. You need to go and see someone. They need to look at stuff.
The other side of the coin, which I think most doctors would say, is that they are overstretched, overworked. There's not enough of them. There's too many people. And I suppose there is an argument out there that this technology is needed in a way to work alongside doctors. But I do have a worry. We've talked time and time again about hallucinations and incorrect information being passed on by LLMs. The bigger worry, I suppose, is that data is read wrong and you were given advice that you're absolutely fine and there's something wrong with you. So I suppose that's the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Do you use AI for medical bits and pieces?
I've used it for stuff I can take a picture of, you know, too much information, but I had like an ingrown toenail.
Too much information.
Took a picture of that and sent it. And like, the diagnosis was pretty good. Warm, salty water. go and get this sort of cream, go and see this sort of person, doesn't get better. You know, that's good. If I had heart palpitations or, you know, I felt drowsy at the wheel of a car, would I, you know, so yeah. I think there's, you know, it's a bit of common sense there. Look, the other side of this is this could be an absolute sort of watershed moment for healthcare. You know, in the way that it completely transforms it. It could take lots of basic queries off doctors. I remember us talking about a study whereby a university had fed AI lots and lots of medical records, and the accuracy of recalling those and using them was actually better than human doctors. So this could be the big watershed moment that completely reshapes patient care.
I feel like it comes back to the thing that we talk about time and time again. Use it as a tool. Don't use it as gospel.
And
actually, you know, feel free to ask ChatGPT what that thing on your leg is and what certain symptoms might mean, but don't rely on it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the thing that we touch upon time and time again.
Are you still wearing your Veruca sock, or did you did that clear itself up?
Get out of town.
Bazooka that Veruca.
That's what chat said to it. okay, let's move on now to huge news from the world of digital and technology. James, this sounds like a bit of a watershed landmark moment because Apple and Google have come together and they've struck a huge deal.
This is big news. Really more from the Apple point of view. So Apple is going to use Google Gemini's AI models to power a revamped version of Siri. Siri, if you don't know, is their AI assistant. You've been able to talk to it for a long time. It's got even smarter under Apple Intelligence. It's going to come into play later this year. It's a multi-year partnership and the first time that two tech giants like this have come together. It's a massive strengthen of Google's position. And we've talked lots about these leaderboards and who's up and who's down.
Apple were perceived as being behind in the AI race. And assume this is almost an admission of that position.
Yeah, it totally is. And AI has been the thing that has disrupted the way Apple have always done things. They've acquired lots of companies. They acquired a company called Shazam, people may remember, which was a music recognition technology, and they embedded that. They worked a bit with TomTom in the early days of Maps, which Apple Maps was a bit of a disaster at the start. But really, they're all about making it their own, making it completely seamless in their ecosystem. Doesn't work with anything else, but works absolutely beautifully and brilliantly. This really is huge because it's the first time they're kind of admitting that they need to borrow in the tech and do it. Now, people will say when you go to Safari and you search, the default search in there is Google. So there's a kind of relationship there. But you're right. It's an admission. It's a real step change for Apple. And I think the valuation of Alphabet, which is the Google holding company as well, is up. So kind of win-win for everyone here.
I do feel like this is a huge, quite unprecedented thing. It's like, I mean, a terrible analogy, but it feels like if, you know, after years of Manchester United and Manchester City and Liverpool competing against each other, all of a sudden Liverpool are borrowing Bruno Fernandes and, you know, United star player and Erling Haaland because they've got Real Madrid now in the same league as them and they want to, you know what I mean?
That's a reasonable analogy, actually.
It feels so foreign and unusual that such two huge rivals and competitors would come together on such a big thing.
The one thing, the one company we're not talking about, interestingly, is OpenAI and ChatGPT, where Apple had sort of cozied up to OpenAI and they thought there'd be some sort of relationship there. Johnny Ive famously was, you know, Steve Jobs' right-hand man, left Apple, set up a new company that was bought by OpenAI. So it's a surprise that they've not gone in there. I think Apple have come out and said they're going to use ChatGPT for some more complex opt-in queries, but really Gemini's front and center. So again, they kind of looked at what's best and Google have come up trumps. I mean, it's a massive tick in the box for Google as well.
James, do you think this is Apple getting into bed with Google, better the devil you know, coming together? Or on the flip side, ChatGPT looks like the new big boy on the block? Or are Apple partnering with Google because it's genuinely the best AI option and actually it's an indictment on ChatGPT?
I don't think Apple would ever ship anything that isn't close to perfect. So in my mind, they would have done their homework on here and they would have realised that Google are top of the pile and that's why they've done that partnership, you know.
And yeah, it really is quite interesting because Apple, formerly the world's most valuable business,
yeah,
it now seems like if they're having to turn to Google for such an important, huge thing, it says quite a lot.
Who are the world's most valuable company?
Oh, I think it would be NVIDIA.
NVIDIA time. NVIDIA time. NVIDIA time. NVIDIA time.
NVIDIA time.
I see what you did there. And for those who didn't listen to last week's episode,
it needs context. Confused, yeah.
But that is our NVIDIA jingle. And when NVIDIA is brought up,
yeah,
that's what you're going to
And we've got some NVIDIA news, or just want to play the jingle?
Well, you brought it up.
I've got nothing.
Right. Well, you just wanted
to. There's probably some news.
Right. You know what? Fair enough. I was quite happy to hear that jingle one more time. You'll be pleased to know there isn't an OpenAI ChatGPT jingle because it would just be ringing throughout the back of the show.
Indeed.
That's enough news. There's a lot going on. But quite literally the good, the bad and the ugly today. Let's move on to your big thing this week.
I mean, this is wonderful. This is a really...
I'll be the judge of that.
Positive... brilliant use of AI. It's Matt Reconstructs History. It's a YouTube channel. A guy called Matt, unsurprisingly, he uses Gen AI and image restoration tools to take historical artifacts and he turns them into things that just have this really amazing modern feel. So he's done stuff like London, New York, Paris in the 1600s, sort of like a history, 12-minute history documentary. He's done the Gettysburg Address. He's done Edinburgh and Boston in the 1700s. And he's taking things that exist in the world, ancient statues, historical figures, and he's reconstructing them using AI to be these kind of moving motion picture things. But it's got this sort of cinematic quality, and Matt himself is sort of recreated in these costumes of the time, and he kind of talks through it. I mean, it's incredible. Don't take my word for it. Some of the comments on this are amazing. There's a person who's commented on the London one. As a film worker, I'm not a fan of AI, but I'm more than willing to concede that this is an exception I'm willing to make. Wonderfully presented and informative, living history. Bravo. What a wonderful use case.
Can I just say, James, you're obsessed with AI slop.
This is not slop, my friend. No.
Obsessed with AI slop. One week it's like the Queen ordering jerk chicken. Next week it's Diana's press conference. You brought that up last week. This week it's non-stop AI slop with you.
Have a look at this. This is, I mean, if it is slop, it's premium tier.
The one thing I would say, yeah, you have sent it to me. It's mind-blowing. Mm. You look at it, be like, this is like a film and it's clearly... probably been created in a matter of minutes. I do think when it comes to slop, my view on it is if it's being used as like a tool, a creative tool, and the human is pushing the direction of the creative, maybe then it's not slop. Maybe then it is a production tool.
You can't help but look at this stuff. This has taken time. It's really intentional decisions around what he's doing. The description on it, this is Matt talking now. I recently picked up some AI skills and thought it'd be a good way to bring these moments back to life. He's kind of a history buff. Nothing flashy, just a way to help history feel more real and easier to connect with. That's the idea behind what I'm doing. I mean, amazing in schools to learn about this stuff. It's very easily watched. There's kind of one thing with this, though, which is we slightly fall into the trap, this sort of cognitive trap. And we were talking about Venezuela last week about some of the AI generated videos of, you know, people crying because Trump's amazing. Turns out they weren't real. We're doing the same with this because it looks so real and it feels so brilliant. There's a danger that we just assume that it's fact. And it's not. It's a reconstruction. It's Matt's take on what might have happened in history. We shouldn't fall into that trap in thinking it is an absolute 100% fact. It's based on a bunch of training data and it's still a computer piecing these things together.
But as we know, the lines between real and deep fakes and creative content and slop, they're just blurry now. And it's so confusing. I struggle. And we have a podcast on this stuff. I mean, goodness knows. There is a lot to break down with that. I don't have the energy to do it right now.
No.
What I will say is you love AI slop.
I challenge people to watch it. We'll put a link in the show notes and call it slop. It's absolutely brilliant. And as you say, I think it's an intentional creative tool rather than this sort of like hack or shortcut or some of the stuff that we talked about. Yeah, love it. Matt Reconstructs History. Go and have a watch.
James, do you think you, and this might be a challenge for you, do you think you could, with the right AI software, which I'm sure you've got at your disposal,
yeah,
create an incredible looking bit of footage.
Yeah.
Challenge? You want to give it a go?
100%. I'll come back next week.
Okay. What
brief me. Come on. What do you want in it?
Okay, I want something which is set during the 1980s. The 1980s.
Yeah.
Don't grok me. It's set in the 1980s.
Yeah.
I want it to tell the story of one of the most legendary music gigs of all time, Live Aid.
Oh, yeah. Very nice.
And I want a bit of behind the scenes and a bit of real action.
You must have seen the recently departed Manchester United manager Ruben Amorim blended with Freddie Mercury at Live 8, and they'd sort of done his thing. And he was doing Bo Rap, but it was to the thing of Ace Justin Bieber. Very good.
That's your challenge. Feel free to tweak it. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud.
I'll be back with that.
Before we move on to this week's listener question, just a reminder, we're on Patreon now, James.
Who'd have thought it?
Yeah, well, look, it's for those few people who get some enrichment out of this show. I was going to say entertainment, but that's unlikely with you sat there.
Well, you know, this is sort of like super fans, you know, and you get a bunch of stuff as well.
You don't put people off. You don't just have to be a super fan to support our patron. You could just be someone who likes the podcast. You might hate James,
no,
but you still want to support the podcast because you're learning something. But yeah, there's a load of interesting things that you can get, including an AI Haven't a Clue t-shirt, exclusive access to the podcast, bonus content, and your questions answered as a priority, as well as our live event, which you will be a VIP guest at. You can see all the details on that by heading to AIHaven'tAClue.com, click the link in the middle of the homepage, and away you go.
It's that easy.
Support the podcast. We would love that. As I said, your listener question is answered as a priority. And that moves us nicely on to this week's listener question, which has been sent in from Tom. And once again, thanks to Tom, we can take a listen to his voice note.
Hey, James, I've got a question for you. I've seen so many new innovations in AI from CES conference, from nail polish to smart Lego bricks. But which do you think is actually most likely to become part of everyday life, and what's likely to not?
I do love a voice note listener question. It's lovely to hear from you, Tom. Yeah. Thank you for asking that very great question. That was very Trumpian of me. It's a very great question.
There it is. Great guy.
2026. First time for it. Back to Tom. This is about Tom because he's answering this week's listener question. James, over to you.
Yeah. So yeah, CES is at the moment. As I was thinking about this, I was recalling I went to CES 10 years ago.
What is CES?
CES is a big consumer electronics show. It's in Las Vegas. It happens every year.
What does it stand for? CES.
Consumer Electronics Show.
I got it.
Yeah, here he
is.
Here he is. Sorry. Any technology or platform or, you know, any electronic manufacturer worth their salt goes there, and it's where all the big launch is happening. So that's happening at the moment. As I said, I was there a decade ago. It was all smart beds, smart toilet seats.
Smart beds?
Yeah, beds that could sort of tell you how much you were sleeping. Smart fridge, obviously that was a bit overdone. All sorts of things for pets. People were calling it like the year of VR. It's never quite got there. But it sort of got me thinking. To the question though, you know, what's some of the stuff that is actually going to become part of our everyday life? The slightly boring answer is probably the stuff that removes friction and is kind of invisible. So your favourite, smart glasses, there's plenty of those things going on. They look like regular glasses, but they can do translations, they can capture notes, they can look at the world contextually around you and figure out stuff around it. Smart home assistants, lots of those things coming out as well. I saw some AI-powered security cameras. They just do the stuff in the background, like the routine stuff, things that tidy up, things that predict, like boring stuff. They're the stuff that's going to make it into our everyday lives. On the other side of the coin, the stuff that is, I guess, less likely to get integrated, and there is a lot of this at CES that never sees the light of day. It's all kind of demo-y, smoke and mirrors type stuff. He mentioned the nail polish thing. I polish smart nails that change colour. What earth would you want? It looks good on stage. I don't really see people doing that. I saw something around bone conducting musical lollipops. They play tunes when you lick them.
Oh, I love them.
Show me where there is a gap in people's life for this
Gwyneth
sort of thing.
Gwyneth Paltrow loves them. Bone broth lollipops.
But this is it. It will get some headlines, but you know, we just don't need these things. It's tech for the sake of tech, and you, for one, George Butler, will say that we don't need that sort of stuff. So I think, in short, the stuff that's going to stick is the slightly boring things that make our lives sort of slightly better. You know, they integrate very easily. You don't have to explain them. They're not a novelty or anything like that. The stuff that's not is some of the silly things that I've mentioned. I'm sure we could go through a long list of howlers that will come out of Las Vegas in the next week.
Well, I suppose from the first week, a lot of the big headlines were the boring, as you say, functional stuff, obviously, in the NVIDIA bits. Once a show is enough, no more. But those NVIDIA bits did, were the things that...
Microchips.
It's probably the game-changing stuff, but 100%. Kind of dry.
Yeah.
Great question, Tom.
Yeah, very
Thank
good.
You very much for that. A T-shirt is on your way. Much appreciated. But quickly on CES, what was it like? Is it enormous? Is it huge? It's in Vegas. What goes on? Is it all very kind of Vegas?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. You just walk along the strip to all the in the different hotels. There's different.
Does it take over the town?
Yeah, I mean, that's why they do it. It's one of the only places, probably in the world, certainly in the Western world, that could host it because it's so big. So you just wander between these things. There's consumer electronics here. There's an autos hotel here. I mean, it's really overwhelming for one. You're really, really jet lagged. Everything's sort of bamboozling because it's all sort of new. Everyone's sort of doing demos. It's quite.
And all of this is taking place in Las Vegas.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like bad enough.
Yeah.
Going on.
Sort of a small distraction in the background, but it's a hell of a lot of fun. People like Phil Rowley, I'm sure, will be there. Will be there every year. Lots of people I know are kind of there this year. But you come away from it, and then you have to sort of make sense of it. And that I used to be in a role where I used to have to do that, which was a lot of fun. But the overwhelm is so much. You take everything in. It's just so sensory and visual. You have to come away and go, actually, what was useful and sort of what's not? And that's always the challenge.
Should we go next year?
Yes!
Bring the pod to Vegas,
oh,
baby.
Oh, me and you walking around the floor doing Vox Pops.
White suits, black shirts.
Why are we doing white suits?
We're in Vegas.
Ridiculous. What are you thinking about?
Are we gambling? I don't care about the what's going on.
I'm gambling every week with you, my friend. This is...
We'll put a tenner on black, please.
Hey, I haven't a clue. Vegas, CES 2027.
Yeah?
Make it happen.
All right.
Yeah, all right.
You've
done.
Heard it here first. Let's see. It's going to be like The Hangover.
The podcast. I love that's hangover. Your frame of reference for Vegas.
If you think I'm going to any of those boring sessions, you're going to go to them. I'm going to be having a good time and we'll catch up and chat about
it. Oh, brilliant.
Tom, once again, thanks for your listener question. And of course, if you have a question you'd like to ask James, you can send us an email. AIHaven'taClue@gmail.com. We might follow up and be like, send it to us as a voice note.
Yeah.
So you can preempt that and just send it to us straight away. But we would love to hear your questions, please. And once again, a reminder, if you do head to our website, James, that is...
AIHaven'taClue.org.uk.
.com.
Yeah, that's fine.
You can find our patron there and become a member of either in the Curious Club.
Yeah, nice.
Or the AI Having a Clue HQ.
Oh, cute. Yeah, got names.
And as a reminder, you can find our patron at AIHavingAClue.com. Time now to move on to, I think this is going to be interesting, James, two guests who have quite a different viewpoint on digital AI technology, certainly than you do.
Yeah, and... both parents, one's a teacher, one has worked in corporate comms, and they are on a mission to rethink how we are thinking at the moment as an industry about AI toys.
Guy and Kitty are joining us from Set at 16. One of their big missions is for smartphone use to be in place for over 16s, and another big thing that they are calling on, especially at the moment, is for AI toys to be recalled. And we're going to find out more from Guy and Kitty all about these topics. Guy and Kitty, thank you so much for joining us on AI Haven't a Clue. It's lovely to have you on. Now, we have all different types of guests on the show, and some are innovators at the forefront of AI, journalists, politicians, And sometimes people who have a rather different opinion on artificial intelligence, and not necessarily always a positive one. We've kind of just touched upon your background, introducing you both here. And I kind of wanted to jump right in with a story that we covered a month or so ago, which was about AI toys. And this is a really pertinent issue right now, and it's something at the forefront of both of your minds. So before we kind of go further into views on digital and tech and young people, let's start right there with AI toys. James, obviously, a quick recap for those who don't know what they are. They're toys with kind of smart tech embedded in them, right?
Yeah, effectively, they're going to know lots more about you. They might be able to take a read on stuff that you're doing. You know, they're kind of framed as helpful, cuddly things. That may well not be the case, though. What's your take on AI toys? We've got CES going at the moment on in Las Vegas. Lots of new announcements, lots of sort of fun, exciting things. When you sort of cut through some of that stuff, though, what's some of those sort of deeper issues that you think we're seeing with things like AI toys?
Well, we're very concerned that they're not safe, that they've not been tested, and this technology is being rolled out far too quickly by companies that are in a rush to get to market. Quite irresponsible, to be honest with you. You've got the immediate harms that have been identified already with these AI toys having inappropriate conversations with young people. That's been quite well documented already, telling children where to find knives and matches in the house, things like this. But the longer term psychological harms, or the possibility of psychological harms, really, really worrying. And the companies don't know what they are, that they are real possibilities of attachments being made by very young children to these toys. Having these conversations at length with a device that's connected to ChatGPT or some other AI, you don't know to what extent the child could be confused or even manipulated by this very new and little understood technology. Even by the people who are making it, they openly say sometimes they don't fully understand it. So to give it to children and to embed it in something that's so beautiful and wonderful as a toy, a cuddly toy, you know, a beautiful teddy bear that's connected to Sam Altman and big tech corporations, we find it quite disturbing and very, very worrying. So we believe in the precautionary principles, but Kitty, you might want to say a bit more about the precautionary principles.
Yeah, and also Kitty, whilst you're there, could you give us some examples, some real concrete examples that you've got where these AI toys have, in your opinion, done something wrong?
Well, at the moment, we're still in a stage where we have the opportunity to make sure that they don't do anything wrong. This AI technology has emerged in the last 3 years. And actually, one of the reasons we set up at a lick, you know, we actually started at the end of last year for the same reason that it was on your lips, which is actually, hang on a second, are these toys safe? Should they be sold for Christmas? And one of the things that we found about it is that we simply don't know yet enough about these toys to be able to say whether they're safe or not. And that's why we're so keen on the precautionary principle. We've had the last 15 years where we've just managed to get our heads around some of the safety issues around sort of social media and smartphones. And yet here we are rushing headlong into a product that we absolutely do not understand. And one of the things that we've been doing since we launched a month ago is actually speaking to a whole load of regulatory bodies, from Ofcom to the Office of Product Safety and Standards, to the British Toys and Hobbies Association, any number of different organizations who are all, by the way, very quickly getting back in touch with us to say, let's meet. Because when we speak to them, what they're saying is, we haven't really addressed this yet. And what we as a group are kind of thinking about is actually, at the moment, regulation of these sorts of toys is split across 10 different organizations. We need a one-stop shop for all of this, for a very specific category, which is toys. And this is the danger that they pose, that they look as sort of harmless, but we simply don't know. As Guy said, the psychological impacts of that mean that in reality, how on earth have these toys already got to market? Because they're aimed at three-year-olds. This technology only came into space 3 years ago. So how on earth is it already on the market? We have no idea what the implications are. What we're seeing is that actually since COVID, in the last 5 years, children's speech has already dropped. And, you know, we just simply don't know what the psychological implications are.
Is I suppose taking like almost a step back and away from toys, is the issue in your eyes that these toys, cute, cuddly toys, that's really aimed at very young people, are being integrated with this tech, which isn't fully proven and regulated and can't be 100% trusted? Or is the bigger issue with young people's relationship with artificial intelligence on a broader level? You know, a 10-year-old using ChatGPT, for example. Where do you see the real issue being? Is it with the toys, or is it actually broader than that?
Well, I would say it's broader.
Yeah, I think it's all of it.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why we're saying set at 16 for generative AI. The AI toys are a huge concern of ours, and I think that's our core focus perhaps for this conversation. But having said that, the use of LLMs to produce answers is causing havoc in education right now. Yeah. Absolute havoc.
As a teacher, give us some examples of how it is causing havoc.
Well, the classic one is that pupils now are having the homework done for them by the AI. People are saying things like, oh, we need to teach the children how to use the AI responsibly, or they use phrases like this. But we all know about homework. I mean, you know, scribbling homework down the back of the bus, copying your mates and so on. Well, now it's just so easy and tempting for a child just to get the AI to give them the answers, and they just copy them out. And that's being reinforced by them doing that work online as well, rather than handwriting it. So, I mean, I know in universities now, quite a few universities are returning to written exams because so much coursework, or the equivalent of coursework at universities, is being generated by ChatGPT and others. And it's the same problem that we're facing in schools. So if you can't verify that the child has done the work, then they haven't done the learning. And so they're not going to learn from the task you're setting them.
The immediacy of what we're looking at, though, right now, is the cuddly toy sector, because we have a golden opportunity. There's a very small window in which we can say, stop. We don't know enough to let these launch to market without proper safety checks. And those safety checks might take time, but you know what? We'll take that risk because actually one life lost is one life too many. And we're not just talking about lives lost. It's about children's well-being. It's about their future. And actually that means economic future, full stop, for all of us. And so we have an opportunity right now with AI cuddly toys to actually say, no, we need to do this differently. And government needs to step in and say, you know, this, you know, it's one step too far to sell these things to three-year-olds, especially when you bear in mind that even, for example, you know, at the moment, the law as it stands says 13 before you can actually, you know, data harvest from young children. And yet here we are saying, it's fine, help yourself to my three-year-old. And I think it's quite important to think of these toys as ports of entry. What we're creating now, one of the things that's really worrying about these toys is that they're also being marketed as alternatives to screens, which is very, very dangerous. When actually there's absolutely no evidence that because they are an alternative, they are any safer.
Yeah.
In fact, it's a whole new range of problems that we might be inviting into our homes.
Let me ask you, you listed a load of regulators there, Ofcom, you talked to lots of them. What are the current regulations around toys? In my mind, I think that's quite a highly regulated sector of sort of young children. Where do we stand at the moment before AI comes into the picture?
Good question. When it comes to toys generally, there is a very, very rigorous process around testing for absolutely everything. In fact, a couple of years ago, when I first started to talk about the product recall, there was a child pacifier that had been tested and proven to be that there was some gadget or something in it that wasn't working. It led to a sort of product recall across Europe for a risk, not an actual harm. And yet here we are with this entirely new category of toy, which we simply don't understand. And when we've gone round and asked all these different organisations, well, what are they doing? The British Toys and Hobbies Association was kind of like, well, it's kind of on our radar, but we're not really sure what companies are doing. You speak to the ICO, they're across it from a sort of, you know, GDPR perspective,
kind of bit,
and all that sort of, you know, data security. But then, you know, what about the product safety? What are the product safety elements of this? And where does psychological testing sit in it all? And there are also, one of the other things about these products is that you talk about it being educational. Where is the evidence?
So what, in your view, what would a safe AI toy look like? What do you think needs to be in place? What tests, what regulations, what should be there in order for these things to be safely sold?
The answer is maybe it will never be. Because if it is interacting with you, it's going to take a bit of time for us to work out what that interaction looks like. How does it play out in terms of relationships? How does it play out in terms of resilience? All of these different things. It may well be that there can't be an AI safe toy. And actually, what do you do if 15 years down the line, we realize there isn't such a thing as an AI safe toy?
Yeah, but also the burden of proof is not on us. It's on the companies to prove it's safe. The question needs to be put to the companies. Is this product safe? What testing have you done? Can you verify that this will have no psychological long-term damage to the children you're giving it to? Can you prove that? They can't.
Do you think there is an element of, as a nation, it's not necessarily completely tied to toys, but when it comes to the likes of LLMs and using ChatGPT in school, for example, is there a risk that if we overregulate and don't let young people experiment with these tools, and if we don't integrate it into young people's lives, is there a risk that we almost kind of run behind our rivals, and we are, in the long run, meaning young people don't have the tools that they need to operate in a post-AI world?
I think it's the opposite. I think right now there's quite a lot of evidence building that the use of LLMs and other AI tools by children is actually making them less clever. So I think we could gain a competitive edge right now by pausing and taking stock of where we're at, rather than going hell for leather, just throwing this tech out, splattering it all over the place, not understanding it, it's not tested. I mean, we've been learning for millennia, you know, quite successfully. Learning's quite a slow process in some ways, which takes repetition and patience. There seems to be this mismatch or this misconception that by rolling out tech, everything's going to be faster. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, some things don't speed up in a way. You know, children are developing, their brains are developing, which is one of the key reasons why they need more protection. Jonathan Haidt talks a lot about that. Their brains are wiring and rewiring. And if we put this tech in, what effect is that going to have on their developing brains? There's a lot of work that's been done about the reading circuit that you build up in your brain as you read, because reading is not something we naturally do as a species. Mm. Language speaking is, but reading has to be really learned patiently and over quite some years. And once the reading circuit's developed, it's really powerful.
Yeah.
If we shortcut, or perhaps a better phrase would be break, that reading circuit, I think we're going to cause a lot of damage to learning. So I'm more glass half empty in terms of...
Do you think with that?
I think it's absolutely profound what you're saying. It's entirely hard to disagree. I guess I'd love to get your take, and I think I agree. It is the companies that ultimately have to make decisions on, are you going to put this thing into market without testing it or not, in light of there not being regulation or law that says they can't. Immediately, if there's a law that they can't do it, I mean, we're seeing it play out with social media in Australia at the moment, then, you know, they can't. Maybe there's some that will find a way, but I agree that the onus falls on the companies. What's going to persuade them to do it, though, without the law being changed?
I think it has to be more than an onus just on the companies. Mm. I think this is where regulation has to absolutely step in. There needs to be a framework. Again, we talk about the one-stop shop. I think we actually need a series of sort of, you know, pass or fails almost in terms of regulation around these toys. Yes, absolutely, these companies can do it, but they also need to be third-party approved. And without that, they do not get to market, because at the moment, what we have is a situation where these companies are absolutely above the law. There is nobody regulating them. Australia going out and doing the brilliant work that it's done on social media, it's actually still only sort of looking at one aspect of it. And you're not, the big companies, the big tech companies involved are not actually going to be suffering as a result of this. There is no regulation. They're going to find ways around it. Yeah. Unless, and this is where Set at 16 comes in, is that actually we need to create a situation where there is a minimum age set at 16 for smartphones, social media, and AI, specifically smartphones, because like Cuddly toys, they are going to be the sort of, they are the point of entry. Mm-hmm. And if you do not regulate those points of entry, it's the equivalent of, locking a door and giving kids the key. Of course, they will find a way around it. And that's one of the key arguments that's constantly being used. Yeah. Oh, children will find a way around it. Yes, if you don't take the key away. Yeah. So that's why smartphones and AI cuddlies are such a critical thing, and why actually, as long as we keep talking about social media, big tech doesn't really care, because they know where there's no way of regulating it. Take the smartphone away, then we're talking.
Mm. It's really interesting having this conversation, and there are so many points that I just wholeheartedly agree with you on, and you are so right that maybe we will look in 10, 20, 30 years' time back at the way that social media is so prolific, especially with young people, and think it was a bit like smoking back in the day. Mm. And there wasn't enough warnings. And the other side of that argument is there a way in which we can, rather than stop it completely, is there a way there is a safe and more healthy balance? Is there a way in which young people get access to, every song ever made and every book ever written, and they can explore knowledge via AI, but in a slightly more
guardrails on stuff.
Is that possible? Is there a world where that is a realistic outcome?
I think there is a perfect world in which that might be a possibility, and that would involve having some very different people at the top of these very powerful companies. And at the moment, the altruistic button has been removed from them.
Yeah.
So until that gets put back in there, and it won't be by them, then actually, I don't think it is. Of course, we would all want there to be a situation where you've got products that are safe and allow you to listen to music, that allow you to travel and use tickets and use money. And I'm sure that actually the technology for that exists. Why aren't we using Oyster card technology, where you can preload, for example, tickets, where you can preload money? You can do all sorts of things with existing technology. You've got GPS. Why don't we have a simpler phone with a QWERTY keyboard that allows for communication? Probably one of the most important things there is out there. It is possible. The thing is, there's not the will, I don't think, at the moment. Yeah. Until something changes and they are made to do it.
Yeah.
And the best thing we can do is remove the children.
Before you leave us, give us the top level on the campaign. And importantly, how can people get involved if they want to learn more?
So as Kitty said, we've not been going long, but we're making a lot of progress already. So we're really delighted with the launch and how people have been supporting us. So please visit our website, setat16.org, on our YouTube channel as well. And we've got an open letter about AI toys, which we'd invite people to read and hopefully sign and share. Sign up for our newsletter, email us, let us know what we can do or how we might be able to work together, because we really want to get a move on. We think this is an emergency.
Yeah.
It's a public health emergency.
And Kitty, if there are any parents listening right now that maybe are on the fence about whether, or maybe even, to be honest, slightly oblivious to this being a huge issue, would you call on them just to think a bit more about this topic and to read into kind of other things and look into it a bit more? Or do you think it's okay that there's kind of a mix of opinions?
I think it's inevitable that there is a mix of opinions. We are being sold so many different storylines around what's good and what isn't good. Mm. Do we just maintain our children's use of these toys, this equipment, or do we sort of take it away altogether? All I can say is that from my experience, I went into this thinking very, very much a sort of, not an early adopter, but thinking, my goodness, if I don't give my child a smartphone, she'll be left behind. And that kind of guided a lot of what we were doing. And there were a lot of toys even then in their infancy that were like, you can do maths on here. You can do things like paint my wings and all the rest of it. So there was a lot of marketing encouraging your child to go on online. Looking back now, I wish to goodness I had not done that. The pain that we have gone through is enormous. Mm. And what I would say about that is that my daughter's generation, she is 18. She and all her friends are saying not just they won't give their own children phones, which should tell us all we need to know about what their real position is, but it's also, we wish they'd never been invented.
Wow.
It's been a really great chatting to you both, and we and thank you for representing a large group of people who probably really passionately agree with your viewpoint and what you're doing, and you're giving them a platform to express their views and opinions. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. Interesting stuff, that. And a different kind of guest. Yeah. We don't often have a guest. I mean, we've had Jack Benjamin and skeptics come on before, but two people who have such a passionate viewpoint on this.
I was really surprised that Kitty had said she'd been to all of these regulators. And the problem is, it's falling between the gaps. No one regulated, the toy regulator, the ICO, Ofcom, no one feels like it's their job to get this thing by the scruff of the neck and seize it. And actually, the bigger challenge of all is maybe trying to get all of those regulators together and collectively do it, or set up something new that's going to be fit for purpose. But it sort of held a mirror up to what the big problem with regulation AI probably is.
I'm going to say something slightly controversial, and I don't know if you'll expect me to say this. I completely agree with what they say around smartphones, having the world in your fingertips, and especially now with LLMs, we see with Grok that some of the huge issues that come with that. I'm not sure though about toys, because of course there will be some, like with all AI, that there's going to be a real small percentage where things go wrong, which is not good. But I think to get there, you've almost got to want to get there. You've almost got to want to be the person that's like trying to catch it out. Is a 6-year-old going to try and catch it out? I'm not sure. Look, totally not saying if they're not safe, that they clearly shouldn't be put on sale. But I do wonder whether actually there are, once they've been proven to be safe, whether there are some quite nice benefits to kids having lullabies sung to them and stories read to them from a toy, and whether actually toys is maybe not the battle that needs to be fought here. It's just maybe the easier one to win.
Yeah, and I think Kitty's point of view there, I mean, she was really clear. She was saying, you know, why don't we set it up like a sort of, you know, a machine that you can just preload stuff onto, rather than allow an algorithm to determine what nursery rhyme's seen. You just put some really solid guardrails on. I must admit, I sort of went into it thinking, you know, maybe I need to provocate a bit here, and maybe they're sort of missing something. I think I came away just very, very hard to disagree. Why would we make really young children the sort of the testbed to see how these things work? Let's figure out if they're safe first, and then let's rule them out if they are.
I can't believe I'm disagreeing with you, guys, but when it comes to toys, I guess it depends how they're set up. And, you know, if you can ask them anything, it's completely different.
Yeah.
But if they're built in to respond to lullabies and bedtime stories, like I struggle to see huge dangers there. I think the bigger issue comes when people are older and they have phones and they can search for anything. Yeah. I do get that. I just wonder, it's a tricky one. We talk about it a lot of the time, especially when it comes to phones, like something needs to be done. But like the genie's out the bottle now. Like, what can we do? And realistically, what's going to happen? And it's almost like, rather than calling on all young people, all 15-year-olds to hand back their smartphones, is there a slightly more realistic first action that we can push for? Like no phones in schools, for example. I don't know. And I do completely agree with what they're fighting for and the morals and the principles behind it and the dangers. I don't doubt the dangers for a second. But I do almost slightly question, I don't know, the first steps to fixing these issues, which are deep set in society now.
I think they're both very passionate. I think they're going to make progress. We should stay close to them, see how they get on.
Yeah, 100%. And it was really interesting to get Guy and Kitty's viewpoint from Set at 16. If you feel passionate like Guy and Kitty, you can support what they do. They gave you all the information on that. Right, that is all we've got time for on this week's episode of AI Having a Clue. I tell you what, it's been fascinating, but it's been a big one, hasn't it? Like, there's some big, deep topics today. Whilst I do think it's important, I kind of hope every week we're not going to, in 2026, we're going to have to be facing these huge issues and huge questions, but do you get the feeling we might be?
I think we've sort of snacked on lots of the meal around the sort of the sides, the nice tasty bits. We're right in getting stuck into it now, because, you know, the Grok thing in particular is throwing up big societal questions about us as a country, what we represent. We've talked a lot about our children, which is, you know, hugely emotive. So yeah, we can talk about sort of the nice frivolous things, and I think the AI slot bit is great, but it's kind of becoming unavoidable, isn't it? But maybe a lighter tone for next week. We should have something in there that's a bit more.
Yeah, maybe some more jingles.
That's your solution, isn't it? Jingles, yeah. Brilliant.
Okay. All right, on that
radio
note.
Guy, more jingles.
Thanks so much for joining us this week. if you have a question or a weird AI story or tale or observation you'd like to share with us, we really would love to hear from you. As always, drop us an email at aihaven'taclue@gmail.com. You can find our Patreon and a link to our Substack at aihaven'taclue.com. And a reminder, every week our Substack goes out with a roundup of big things going on
it's
in the
a
world
good one. Yeah.
Of AI. You can subscribe, you can rate, you can share the podcast with a friend or a stranger. Doesn't matter to us, a listen is a listen.
Be careful though, always.
All that's left to say is thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Team AI Having a Clue, Molly Carter and David May, and we will catch you next time. But for now, remember, as long as you're not using Grok,
stay curious.